This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
What's going on, Katie?
Oh, you know, just hanging out, getting ready to talk about JFK. Hello, new listeners from our Cleopatra TikTok. That was crazy. We haven't recorded since that happened.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yes.
Because we've been doing everything ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all really, like, blew us up, and the past, like, couple weeks have been crazy.
Yeah, it's been really nuts, so hello.
And thank you.
Yes, thank you
for interacting. We love seeing all the civil discourse happening in the comments, and everybody who leaves secret tunnels comments, you're our favorite. Secret tunnels, secret, damn.
Yeah, that was real popular.
Yeah,
for sure.
That was my favorite. My husband is sneezing in the background.
Damn, Dan.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Yeah, so that's been really cool. Otherwise, just working on like social media content and Patreon content.
Yes, and speaking of Patreon, we have had a few new patrons sign on, which is like so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. You guys are helping us make sure that we can bring you the best sounding and best quality content possible.
Yep.
With your contributions.
We're looking at things like merch is on our list, some stickers for that, and, you know, cameras to start bringing visual things. So as we start seeing more patrons come in, we'll be able to start getting that stuff out there, which is so cool.
So cool.
So cool.
And we have a few shout outs.
Yes.
So our first shout out goes to Julie M. If you are comfortable with us saying your last name, y'all can let us know when you are a patron. But for now, we're not going to do that for privacy's sake.
Yeah. Just, so, you know, you never know.
So thank you so much, Julie M.
Thanks, Julie.
Julie is signed up as one of our helpful little bugs, which is our $3 tier. So thank you so much for that. Like, we really appreciate that so much. Mm-hmm. We really hope that you're enjoying the content, the extra content. And then we have shout outs for Erica F., who is one of our absolute gems. That's the $5 tier. Thank you so much, Erica.
Yes.
Erica, also with the $5 tier, gets access to friends-only stuff that we post on social media. So if you want that, you can sign up for the Absolute Gems tier. We also have another Absolute Gem, which is our friend Joe.
An absolute gem. If there could be
literally
anyone.
The definition of an absolute gem, one of our favorite humans in existence, who has been supporting us for a very long time now and listens to all of our episodes and is honestly just like the sweetest, one of the sweetest people that we know. We love you, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love all of you so much.
We love all of you.
Yep, we just introduced a $1 tier, which gets shout outs and access to our patrons only Facebook group.
Yes, that we just started.
Mm-hmm.
So every tier gets access to the patrons only Facebook group, but every tier above the $1 one gets access to extra content like videos and other things like that.
Videos, extra episodes. Right now, we just recorded one where patrons will be voting in order of what extra content they want to hear, which will be like full bonus episodes. So if you're looking for more stuff, extra JFK stuff that's not necessarily as verified as the stuff I'm about to talk about.
Some rumors, you know, some gossip.
Yeah. Then hop on over to Patreon. It seems like it's a little amount of money, but it really goes a long way into supporting the podcast, so
really
thank you
does.
All so much.
Yes. I don't really have much of an update anyway, so we could just move right on.
Yeah, we can just the first note. All right, y'all, let's dive back into our Kennedy family series with JFK's time in the White House. So yeah, that's where we left off, right? My last note was, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
Yeah, and I told you that my boss's cell phone plays that every time the phone rings.
Yes. Yeah. So in this episode, we're going to outline the tumultuous time JFK had while being president, the enemies he had, the ones that he made, and all of this is leading up to his assassination, which I think will probably be two episodes that start next week.
Okay.
So I just want to acknowledge that since we're starting with him as president, I know that I've skipped over the JFK Marilyn Monroe affair, because mm-hmm. that started a little bit earlier than this. But she's also not just some side story in JFK's life. She deserves mm-hmm. her own episode. So I'm just going to acknowledge, yes, I know I haven't talked about that, and I'm not really going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So just going to move right past that. And I know you're probably wondering why we're doing this, but it's important that we understand all of the characters that come back into play as theorized perpetrators later, because it's a lot deeper than people think that it is.
Yeah.
So we left off, JFK had just become president, so let's pick up right there. The way that it was presented in American dynasties and in a lot of places, it was after JFK became president, quote, Joe let JFK pick his cabinet, with one exception, that Bobby was going to be the attorney general.
He let him.
You're not the fucking president, bro. And you're like a hardcore Nazi sympathizer and an anti-Semitic, which I did not stress enough in that first episode about him. Like, blamed the Jewish people for the fucking Holocaust, anti-Semitic.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like, horrible dude. We didn't vote for you, sir. Like, we voted for JFK.
No control here.
No, you're a bad person. We don't want you. No.
Daddy says do this.
Joe let JFK. So Bobby had to be the attorney general. Bobby Kennedy, who had never tried a case in a court of law, may have been the least prepared person to take on the job of attorney general in the United States.
Oh, no.
So let's just sit on that for a second. All of it. Joe let John insisted Bobby is attorney general. You're not the president. Bobby, you don't have any law experience. haven't tried anyone in a court of law. And at one point later, people are talking about nepotism, and JFK jokes, well, I figured I should get Bobby some experience in court before he goes on to be a lawyer. Like, you're the attorney general. This is like a really fucking important job.
That's like, it's totally backwards. It needs to be the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's how that happens normally. What? That's wild.
Yeah. But Joe Kennedy is the dad, the top Kennedy. People were so worried about JFK being Catholic and the country being run by the Pope that no one stopped to think about his fucking father.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like, I don't know why you're worried about the Pope. He's got nothing to do with
this. He's got nothing to do with this, but eyes on Joe Kennedy. American dynasty experts points to the need to have someone watching JFK's back. And this next step, that the responsibilities of the presidency are just too much for JFK's shoulders and bad back to hold, both metaphorically and literally. Damn. Like I said before, he was sickly, sexy, and going for it. Like, he's a sick dude. He's fully wearing a back brace almost all the time at this point. That's like a corset. Since that surgery, he's had to wear a back brace.
Wow.
Which comes into play in his assassination. They bring in Bobby Kennedy, and he's had his back his entire life, and he continues to do so. JFK, his wife, and little kiddos move into the White House, and we as a country are just in love with what is unfolding. They at the time have 3-year-old Caroline and little baby John Jr., which people affectionately refer to as John John. Like, my mom calls him John John.
John John.
John John.
I'm going to ask Gigi if that's
if that's what she calls him. And there are genuinely, like, the cutest photos of these kids in the White House. Like, there's a photo of Caroline, like, hiding under the desk in the Oval Office, like, holding the phone.
Stop. That's adorable. Wait, I'm going to look it up while you're telling us this.
There's toys in the White House.
Oh! And that's, like, never...
Yeah. Presidential historian Alexis Coe says that no one can ever remember seeing children in the White House. Suddenly, there are playthings in there, animals and toys. And not just any kids in the White House, but we're Kennedy kids. We're getting a family who is fully prepared to give us the best versions of themselves on screen in a way that no one really has before, because TV is also just now becoming a big thing.
Yeah.
No one's had the opportunity, and anyone who has did not do it as well as the Kennedy family.
God, you know, now that I look at pictures of JFK and, like, have this understanding of how sickly he was, man, I see
it. You see it.
I see it now.
Mm-hmm. And if you watch videos of him in the White House, you can tell he's wearing a brace, a back brace. Yeah, look at her.
So adorable.
Right?
That's so cute.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. First of all, the fact that there's like a secret little door in the front of the desk in the Oval Office is crazy.
Cool. It's a little hiding spot.
I'm going to save a bunch of these photos and we're going to post them on Instagram.
Oh, I have some that I'm going to send you, but save all of the ones you want in case they're not the ones that I have.
Okay.
But like, they're cute as shit. They're a super cute family.
It's adorable.
They're an adorable family.
It's like the perfect little vision of the nuclear family.
Mm-hmm. They are just a camera ready, picture perfect family. And we, the American citizens, are eating it up. Gobble, gobble, gobble. That's literally in my notes. Joe Kennedy Sr. is staying away from his son. He's in Florida and he's not visiting the White House. He never appears with JFK in public.
Damn.
Joe knows what that would mean for his son. Joe was fully anti-Semitic, and according to James Patterson's book, The House of Kennedy, Joe blamed the Jewish people for the Holocaust. So, like, fuck you, Joe Kennedy. You should stay away from the White House. Okay, I'm glad that wasn't my notes. He sucks. He sucks so much. Speaking of terrible judgment from the Kennedy men, we have discussed in the past how sickly JFK is. And I said in the last episode, if a mosquito bites Jack, the mosquito gets sick. But apparently the quote is actually, if a mosquito bites my brother, the mosquito dies.
Oh.
Sick burn, Bobby.
Damn.
JFK
had
real questionable judgment when it came to doctors. Not only the Addisons, the repercussions of all of his childhood illnesses, and also his back. He's been wearing that back brace. Oh, since the Second World War boat accident, excuse me. So longer than
Damn.
That surgery. That's described as like a corset. It covers like up from here down. JFK had a plethora of doctors to take care of him. But in 1996, before he took office, before he debated Nixon, he was introduced to Dr. Max Jacobson. His college friend introduced him to him.
Okay.
A quote from New York Magazine. Jacobson sized up his new patient and gave Kennedy one treatment, quote, that instantly made him feel stronger and very alert. And after that, Jacobson was like Zelig and Camelot.
Is it like cocaine?
We'll get into the amphetamines.
Oh, no.
And just as like a personal note, I don't think that people who are healthy or not chronically ill can even begin to understand what it's like to be sick and in pain all the time.
Yeah.
And you find something that makes you feel better for even just a little bit after a life of constant shit.
Mm-hmm.
When I stopped eating gluten and my body started to heal up, there was a day where I woke up and I realized that it felt like my whole life I'd been living underwater and like breathing through a tube, not knowing that if I just did this one thing, I could swim up and actually get air. So
yeah.
When you find that thing that makes you feel better,
you're gonna do that thing.
You're gonna do it. So after another incident of Dr. Jacobson being there for JFK after hurting his back in 1961 during a tree lighting ceremony.
Oh!
Sensitive back. Dr. Jacobson earned his very own Kennedy nickname, Miracle Max.
Oh.
So he started going on trips with JFK.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a quote. Jacobson stayed on call for Kennedy. The White House would contact his office using the code name Mrs. Dunn. And Jacobson would travel to D.C. or Hyannisport or Palm Beach, usually on a twin engine owned and piloted by Mark Shaw. Gate logs show Jacobson visited the White House more than 30 times in 1961 and 1962. However,
good Lord,
the Secret Service and baby bro Bobby were super sketched out by Dr. Jacobson. And honestly, oh, shit. Bobby had the right to be. After years of seeing his brother go through so many different procedures and so many different doctors, all of a sudden, this one random doctor has something that can make him feel amazing when everyone else was like, this is all we can do. No way. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Attorney General Bobby Kennedy ended up sending a sample of this magic elixir to the FBI to be tested, but there wasn't enough of it to study.
No.
When his brother approached the president, he was just like, look, this is weird. We don't think that this is like good for you. And the president responded with, I don't care if it's horse piss. It's the only thing that works.
Damn.
Yeah. Like, whew.
Jeez, that's crazy.
Now, a lot of like really formal documentaries and people who like really admire JFK will be like, ah, yes. And we'll never know what was in those shots because we're talking about JFK and a president. But let's just look into Mac Jacobson for a quick second.
Okay.
For many years, Dr. Mac Jacobson, a 72-year-old general practitioner in New York, has been injecting amphetamines, the powerful stimulant the drug culture calls speed, into the veins of dozens of the country's most celebrated artists, writers, politicians, and jet setters. That's a quote from the New York Times.
Oh, shit.
Another quote. Although Dr. Jacobson acknowledged to the New York Times that he often mixes amphetamines into the medicine he injects, patients are seldom told what the mixture contains. Anything beyond vitamins and hormones. The doctor would not reveal which patients received amphetamine and which, if any, did not.
If any? Oh, no. They're like, we're going to go under the assumption that you have done this to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Because wow. What else would have made JFK feel so great? It cannot be said with certainty that the Kennedys, because the First Lady saw him as well, or with a few exceptions, any other specific patient received the amphetamines. It is known, however, that Dr. Jacobson uses an unusually large amount of amphetamines in his practice. The doctor's office reported, because this amphetamine wasn't illegal at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor's office reported that Dr. Jacobson buys amphetamine at the rate of 80 grams per month. This is enough to make 100 fairly strong doses of 25 milligrams every day.
Wow. Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. So authors Richard A. Lertzman and William J. Burns wrote Dr. Feelgood with Skyhorse Publishing, and they allege that Jacobson's elixir was concerning. Quote, experimenting on animals, patients, and himself, Jacobson looked for ways he could mix early mind-altering drugs with vitamins, enzymes, animal placentas, and a small amounts of hormones.
Whoa.
And believed that these drugs could not only cure disease, but could affect remedies on a cellular level.
Psh.
Oh, hold on. The doctor's concoction, which evolved to become a mixture of methamphetamine and goat's and sheep's blood.
Stop. What?
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy.
So yeah, JFK was seeing that doctor for the rest of his life.
Who in their right mind let this man keep his medical licensing?
I could do a whole episode on him. I really could. And I just, the only reason I didn't is because My Favorite Murder just did one. And I was like, oh, don't fuck that. So keep all of that in mind as we talk about the rest of JFK's life, because Dr. Jacobson was there for all of it. So 1961 is the height of the Cold War. The US is terrified of the spread of communism from Russia. And Cuba had just established their new government. Cuba's revolution started in 1953 with the assault on Moncada Barracks in July. And eventually, the kind to the USA leader at the time was overthrown and replaced with Fidel Castro.
Okay.
So during Eisenhower's presidency, Castro did come to visit the US and was like, hey, like, can we be cool? And Eisenhower wasn't about it at all and just basically snubbed him, ghosted him. They were supposed to meet, and Eisenhower just went like fucking golfing instead.
Oh, damn.
Like, yeah.
Okay.
So Castro was like, hey, Russia, what's up? You seem cool. You seem better than this.
Yikes.
Q, head of CIA, notorious fuckwad Alan Dulles, with a plan that we'll hear more about in a little bit. So listeners, if you remember our MK Ultra episode, Alan Dulles was the head of the CIA who was working with Sidney Gottlieb to do the clandestine mind control experiments on people in the hospital. Mm. That's this guy.
So we already know the caliber of human that he is. Terrible. For anyone who hasn't listened to that episode yet, please go back and listen to it. But like, he's a piece of shit.
He's a horrible dude. And I get into it a little bit more in this episode because it is a little bit intertwined.
Awesome. Spill the tea.
Yeah.
I want to hear more about how this guy is a douchebag.
So Alan Dulles goes to Dwight Eisenhower with a plan. And Eisenhower is like, hell yeah, here's $13 million. Do this. Get Castro out.
Oh my God.
The biggest part of this plan was that no one could know that America was behind it. So they wanted to help push along a regime overthrow in Cuba and make it seem like the Cuban people are
the ones that wanted it.
The ones who are overthrowing Castro.
Okay.
And they want to put in a new government that like likes the USA.
Okay.
Which from your UN episode, we all remember you can't fucking do that.
Yeah.
It's not how it fucking works at all. Now Goosey's growling.
There is something spooky going on over in that corner right now.
Oh, bro.
I'm like, open a window and tell them to get out.
The door, you know, the one to the attic?
No. Is it open?
That just fucking opened.
Oh my God.
Look, JFK, if this is you, I'm not stopping. Go eat some soup for lunch. That was his favorite lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Fucking shit. Okay. So off to Miami, the CIA goes to find Cubans who are against Castro, who had defected from Cuba. And the CIA just like tiptoes over there, covering their little CIA badges, being like, no, we're not the CIA. Some rich company who hates communism hired us to help you get rid of it.
Wow.
And they started training them in guerrilla warfare, demolition, and just like CIA tactics.
Well, they literally gaslit them into attacking their own home country.
Mm-hmm. Basically. And these people wanted to get Castro out, but like this wasn't on their agenda because these were just like lawyers and doctors and just like everyday people who didn't agree with Castro. So they defected when he took over.
Mm-hmm.
So these people were called Brigade 2506. And I'll be honest, there is a moment right here where I was like, I could go in, the rest of the episode could be in detail discussion about the Bay of Pigs, which is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what the topic is. And it's important that I just give the understanding and move on. Me talking to
you're like, myself. I'll hyperfixate on that some other time.
It's just insane. The Bay of Pigs is fucking insane. Okay. So JFK enters into the White House with this pile of shit on his plate. The CIA is training Cubans who have defected from Castro, basically, in guerrilla warfare. And this sparks what was one of the biggest scandals of JFK's presidency. But like when you're shot in public during a parade and it's caught on film and 70% of the people don't believe the official story, that's obviously going to be the top controversy. In his election, Kennedy talked a huge game about Cuba and communism. Okay. And was like, y'all are soft on Cuba and communism. Fuck you, Nixon. You guys aren't doing enough. I'm going to do so much more. Nixon couldn't say anything, though, because he knew that the CIA was secretly training Cubans to help overthrow Castro. Mm-hmm. But he can't say that, like, when he's running. So he just, like, doesn't really say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people, like, point to that being what lost him the election, was, like, how he didn't go hard enough on Cuba.
Okay.
So when JFK got into office, he naturally had to be, like, filled in on this plan that was happening. So Alan Dulles comes in and is like, all right, check this shit. We trained over 1,400 anti-Castro Cubans, and we're going to bring a bunch of them to this landing site, but then we're just going to hang out there. And then the word that we're there to overthrow Castro is going to get out. And the other people who don't like Castro are going to be like, yes, finally, let's overthrow him. And they'll rally with us against him. And then we'll take these planes that are American planes, but we painted them to look like they're from Cuba. They're going to bomb Castro's small but mighty Air Force. Shit. And bam, 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 we win.
They sound so confident.
And JFK was like, this is a really bad idea. Yeah. And I'm going to take it and make it so much worse.
Oh,
so
no.
I know you've been planning this for years to go to this one area over here. And tactically, it makes so much more sense. But instead, we're going to go to this other area over here, which is known as the Bay of Pigs, which is not helpful at all. But we're going to do it anyway. And then I know you guys want to do this at dawn when people are like just waking up and not necessarily prepared. But that plane, super American. So we're going to do this at nighttime. And instead of sending all of the people that you have been planning and training to send, I know you've been doing this for years, we're going to send less people. We're going to do less, and we're going to make this happen in a month. Do it now. Stuff You Should Know podcast points to this as the moment where this was the time to back out. This was the time
to scrap the plan.
You had changed it so much. Just throw it away and maybe start over or don't.
Or don't. Just don't.
But they continue. They continue on anyway. And the amount of fuck-ups that happen with the Bay of Pigs is insane.
When everything that could go wrong goes wrong.
And so much worse. So, April 15th, 1961, 8 CIA-supplied B-26 bombers attacked Cuban airfields. It was supposed to be more, though. It was supposed to be 16. But Kennedy was a little scared because the New York Times had just run an article spilling all the tea about this attack.
How did they find out?
Because no one would shut the fuck up about it.
Loose lips sink ships.
Yeah. So the trained 1,500 troops split into 6 battalions. And then on the night of April 17th, the main invasion force landed on the beach at Playa Grion in the Bay of Pigs, where it did manage to overwhelm a local revolutionary militia. Though the invasion force started losing strategic initiative, U.S. President John F. Kennedy was supposed to send more air support. But because of the article, Kennedy's understanding of optics being everything was like, shit, this looks too bad. The plan required the involvement of both air and naval forces. So without air support, the invasion was basically unrecognizable from the original plan. The invading force was defeated within 3 days and surrendered on April 20th.
Wow.
Most of the surrendered troops were publicly interrogated and put into Cuban prisons.
Damn.
The Cuban government's victory, in turn, solidified Castro's role as a national hero and further pushed the political division between the two formerly allied countries.
Wow.
It also pushed Cuba closer to the Soviet Union, which was the exact opposite of the goal of this mission, and sets the stage for the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. In the end, 114 people died.
Man, would you look at that. Silly white men making dumb decisions.
And the rest...
Who'da thunk it?
Who knew?
Who knew?
The rest were captured and kept for 20 months. The U.S. did negotiate them back for $53 million worth of food and medical aid, leading Che Guevara, Castro's right-hand man, to publicly thank the U.S. for the trade, which then equaled the playing ground for the two countries. Because, for the record, $53 million in the 60s is $533 million today.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild.
So this was a fucking disaster, to say the least.
I mean, who saw that coming?
Who saw? So we will be getting more into the Bay of Pigs into Patreon. So if you are curious, check there for some extra content. This was a disaster to say the least, and JFK blamed the CIA that he already didn't like and didn't trust, and to be honest, with good fucking reason, because it's Alan Dulles and Sidney Gottlieb. Go listen to our MKUltra episode if you need more on these fuckwads. It's said that after this, Dulles is forced to resign. Kennedy nudged him out. And for those who listen to MKUltra, taking Gottlieb's BFF, Richard Bissell, with him, which had a huge role in the ending of the government's drug-related secret torture of prisoners and hospital patients. Mm-hmm. Like, because of the Bay of Pigs, Alan Dulles left, and then Richard Bissell left, and then Sidney Gottlieb kind of got pushed out, and then this whole chain of events started that because this happened, we now know about MKUltra.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Full circle.
Isn't that really fucking crazy?
Yeah,
had
that
this
is really
not
crazy.
Happened, I don't know if we ever would have found out about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And like, what a thing for us to like not find out about.
Right? Right?
Like, okay, Ultra is absolutely unhinged.
It's crazy. So just like the repercussions of Kennedy's presidency is just really widespread. This is also where we get the famous alleged quote of Kennedy, where he said that he wanted to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the wind. This is a journalist's retelling of a third-party story, so we don't actually know if he for real said that.
I was going to say, that's so dramatic.
It's a quote from a book.
Okay.
It's still very 2011 Tumblr.
Yeah! I was like, that doesn't feel like something he would say.
Oh, no, it does. Oh, it does.
Oh, okay.
He absolutely would. It's disgusting the way that I've studied his awesome, dramatic, beautifully poetic speeches. But yeah, we know that he didn't like the CIA.
Yeah.
So if you remember in the third part of MKUltra, when the CIA was working on ways to kill Castro, that was like the exploding seashell and the poison cigar. We also talked about how the CIA was working with the mob.
Yes.
To do that. So Politico magazine says Miami's Fontainebleau Hotel is where the CIA scheme to kill Castro.
Fontainebleau.
Well, that's where the CIA scheme to kill Castro was hatched.
Oh, wow.
In September of 1960.
Well, it is a very fancy place.
Mm-hmm. So they were working with Sam Giancana, who we talked about in the last episode.
Giancana
and another gangster, Roselli. They were approached by Robert Mayhew, a middleman for the CIA. The agency referred to him as a cutout, like a buffer who shielded the CIA and the White House from... We talked about cutouts in MKUltra. He offered these mobsters a $150,000 kill fee for Castro. And the gangsters said, nah, we'll do it for free.
Damn, they were like, we want this to happen.
They're like, nah, it's fine. So yeah, you heard that name, San Giancana. The motherfucker is everywhere in JFK's life. Because even everything that's going on with Castro and the CIA, Bobby Kennedy is still trying to end the mob in the courts. He's like still going after him. And the FBI, because of that, is surveilling the mafia. On these FBI tapes, Giancana states that he helped get JFK elected. And that's where that call in the first or second episode about, I think it was the second episode, we're going to get Chicago with a little help from some friends.
Yeah, that was definitely last week's episode.
Yeah. So whatever the truth about how the mob did or didn't help Kennedy doesn't really matter because we have a tape of a mob member telling someone that he did.
Yeah.
And telling people that he feels betrayed and threatening JFK with revenge and murder because he feels betrayed. Of course, it could all be a fucking lie. But when a mob boss starts telling people that they're going to kill you and they've killed a bunch of people in the past just for fun, it doesn't really matter if it's a lie or not. The threat is there and he probably means good on it to protect his reputation.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. There are more alleged ties between the two with very little hard evidence. Check the Patreon. So if this were a JFK podcast and that's all we talked about, I would make an entire episode talking about the civil rights movement and how JFK and Bobby were completely oblivious and didn't really care about the civil rights movement until the Freedom Riders and Martin Luther King were surrounded by white supremacists at a protest. And that did have some pretty big impacts, especially when the University of Alabama, two students tried to come and desegregate the last segregated state college. And JFK and RFK ended up sending in federal troops to get the governor to step aside.
Wow.
He did, you know, give an entire speech on the need for civil rights, and he really pushed a lot of things forward in that circumstance. So after JFK was assassinated, there were some people who think that it was segregationists or racists who did it, but there is not as much evidence of that as there is for the mob or the CIA, Alan Dulles, who he just fired, and all of this stuff. And because this episode is leading up to the assassination, what I tried to do in it was cover the people who really wanted JFK dead and who we know had the means to do it. So the next episode, we're going to talk about the murder and the suspects. And now that we have the suspects and an understanding of why they're on the list, y'all are ready to get into the day of the assassination of JFK.
I'm so excited. And even though I've watched all of your TikToks about it, like, I'm really just excited to have like a full timeline.
Yeah. This is way more in depth also. I mean, at this point, we've done 3 hours of JFK episodes total. We have a bunch more. I don't even think I did a total of 61 minute videos.
No, I don't think so.
So this is way more information, but I'm so excited to get into the assassination and the Warren Commission, and why all of the parts of the Warren Commission are really sketchy, because some of the people that we talked about today are the people that investigate his assassination, which is weird.
Oh, America.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the last of the prelude before the assassination, which you and I will be recording on Wednesday.
Nice. I'm excited.
Well, we talked about how they'd be ready on Wednesday.
Yes. All right, guys.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week.
Until then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast, or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.